90.3 867 1190
Near FM.
On the line I have, all the way from Talla Hospital, is Professor Sean Kennelly, and he is co-lead of Dementia Trials Ireland. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Michael.
Now, I was getting myself all mixed up. I read down through your list of what comes after your name. I can't remember what they call them, suffixes. Is it?
But, yes.
And I said to myself, I'm not reading all that out.
No, I think the take-home point is I'm a geriatrician by training, based in Talla University Hospital, but I'm director of the memory services here in Talla, and I'm director of a clinical trials unit. So I spend most of my working day looking after young and old people who are living with dementia.
Now, for the listeners and for myself, would you explain what actually dementia is?
So dementia is a term rather than a diagnosis. It's a term that we give when somebody, as a result of a memory or thinking problem which has developed, is no longer able to do their day-to-day activities as well as they would have done them before. It's not a diagnosis. It's a bit like saying somebody is breathless. It doesn't point to what's causing it. Alzheimer's disease then, and oftentimes it's the most common question I get asked in clinic, is what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease? Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. And it's caused by two proteins that build up in the brain called amyloid and tau. But there's lots of other causes of dementia, including stroke or what we call vascular dementia, Parkinson's related dementia, which is due to other proteins, or a dementia called frontotemporal dementia. So there are different causes of dementia, but dementia itself is a term that refers to somebody losing their ability to do their day-to-day tasks as well as they would have done them before.
Indeed. God bless, my mother passed away from vascular dementia, and then my grandmother had Alzheimer's. So I did know the difference, but I knew it covers a multitude, the term dementia.
That's it. And our understanding of these diagnoses and, you know, how they affect the brain and how, as a result, that affects people's memories and behaviours has exponentially increased over the last 5 years. For example, we've identified many of the proteins that are responsible, for these different types of dementia. And we've identified the parts of the brain, and I often try and describe the brain as like a fuse board, and depending on what part of the brain is affected. So sometimes these proteins, for example, will build up in a visual center as opposed to the memory center, and as a result, people get visual symptoms. So in other words, their depth perception, their ability to read, that might become affected more so than their memory, or else they may build up in a different part of the brain called the frontal lobe. And as a result of that, you may get personality changes or difficulty in organizing your day. So depending on what part of the brain these proteins or, you know, these events affect, you may get different symptoms, which is often quite confusing for people, because as with yourself, where you've the experience of, you know, two people that you've seen living with dementia, sometimes they're often wondering, well, you know, this isn't the same as what I saw, you know, before, and this doesn't sound like what I read about in the books about memory. So that's why we can sometimes have different symptoms and different behaviours associated with dementia.
Indeed, I know one of the first things that shone through with my mother was her speech. She'd be talking to you, but she'd want to say car, and she'd say mountain.
So language, sorry, I'm cutting across. Yeah, no, language is another one of those areas of the brain. The language area of the brain is very close to our memory area of the brain. So when these proteins affect it, and it can sound very reductive to be talking about proteins and things like that, but it is, I suppose, and it's not to lose sight of the individual or to lose sight of the impact of the symptoms on the person, but it is also to highlight there is a stigma around dementia, and a lot of that stigma comes from often an underappreciation that it is a medical condition as our other medical conditions. And that's why we have this great hope about developing treatments for it, and coming up with, you know, medicines that can reduce the likelihood of it progressing, but also hopefully one day preventing it happening at all, and other strategies that help people to live well with dementia.
And I take it that's why it's important to be able to tell which what the problem is. Is it this protein or is that protein? Because then you can actually target with a drug, or you know how to best help.
Yeah, I mean, we're in our infancy of understanding all of this. But if you think of it like cancer, so people understand the importance of a biopsy in cancer, and the results of that biopsy thereby dictating what treatment you would get. This is going to be the same, and this is the vision and the mission for organisations like Dementia Trials Ireland and other groups around the world, is that we get much better at identifying exactly what's causing these symptoms, and ultimately that we develop treatments to either minimise the effect or to prevent them.
Now, which brings us neatly on to Dementia Trials Ireland, which you've just launched. What exactly is it?
So, I mean, this is a really exciting new national, what we'd call a clinical trials network. And the aim of this network, which is with my, which is led by Irasema Leroy from Trinity, my TCD colleague, is to develop a platform whereby we will be able to, make clinical trials for medicines or other interventions that will help people live well with dementia or reduce their symptoms, and make that accessible around the country. So we already have a few sites who are doing these clinical trials, as there would be for cancer. We do clinical trials for dementia in Ireland already, but the focus of Dementia Trials Ireland is to increase the number of sites and the number of services that are doing these clinical trials, in particular outside of Dublin, so that people who are living with memory difficulties have access to participating in these trials. Yeah, if you take it, about 20% of people diagnosed with cancer in Ireland get to participate in a clinical trial of new or novel agents that might reduce or improve their outcomes for cancer. Less than 1% of people in Ireland who are diagnosed with a memory difficulty have the opportunity to participate in a clinical trial. So we've a lot of work to do, but this is a really exciting HRB-funded, and that's the Health Research Board, project to make far more equitable and accessible access for individuals to participate in these studies.
And I take it it's really important to get as many people as possible taking part in these studies.
Yeah, and there is a bit of expectation to manage here, because similar to cancer trials, there is a very select group who ultimately manage to get through the sift to be eligible to participate in a medicines trial. But what we are trying to do is ensure that we get to screen and look at as many people as possible to see if they're eligible. Many of the studies that we have at the moment are for people with milder symptoms. But what we hope to build out over the next 5 years is a suite of studies that will look at people who have little or no symptoms, to mild symptoms, to more advanced symptoms. So it's a real focus of Dementia Trials Ireland that we're looking at not just medicines, but also non-pharmaceutical interventions, such as, let's say, sensory enhancement, improving your hearing and your vision in residential care settings. But a suite of interventions to see, what is it that will help people live well with dementia, or ultimately the aim to prevent dementia happening in some groups.
Which I'm going to ask you, are there any tips you would give to someone out there who is maybe concerned that the dementia may be a problem for them in the future, like myself, who's had both my grandmother and mother suffered from some form of dementia, and maybe have a concern that they may it may be coming down the line for them. Is there anything they can do to prolong or push away the date that might start to impact them, or to actually eliminate it altogether?
Yeah, so this is a regular conversation I'd have in clinic, and where I always start is there's nothing anybody does that causes them to develop dementia, but there are strategies that we can do that will minimize the risk. Family history, believe it or not, unless it's with individuals or more than one individual under the age of 65 or a first degree relative, doesn't really carry a huge. I mean, there are some familial forms of dementia, but it's probably about less than 2% of our overall causes of dementia. So actually, the vast majority of dementia is what we'd call sporadic and happens as a result of what we also call a de novo or just a sporadic gene mutation. Things that can really help is this whole concept of brain health over the last 5 years. So we know that up to half of all dementias are preventable by adopting better lifestyle messaging. Some of that happens early in life, and it's about better educational piece. And if we look at the amount of people who are staying in school to complete second level education now versus 30 years ago, that will have a profound impact on the dementia risk as they age. There's other things then as we come into midlife. Hearing has come out as a very, very, so addressing hearing loss and making sure that we get our hearing checked, because actually, similar to memory, we're really bad at making our own judgment on whether our memory is good or whether our hearing is good or whether our vision is good, because our brain compensates all the time. So having your hearing checked is really important, because we know reduced hearing increases quite a bit your risk of developing dementia later in life. Stuff like making sure your blood pressure, cholesterol, exercise is an absolute essential component. Better diets, but yet again, it doesn't have to be an extraordinarily clean diet, but we do reflect on what we call the Mediterranean diet. So increasing the amount of greens and nuts and olive oil and those kind of things into our diet, and less red meat is often associated with. And there's trials that has confirmed much of this. One of the key things I would say, and it's often underreported, is the influenza vaccination. And we're into flu vaccine season. Flu vaccine has been associated with a 40% reduction in your likelihood of developing Alzheimer's disease. And subsequent years of getting flu vaccine increases the protection it gives. And we know that that happens as a result of reducing down inflammation in the brain. So flu vaccination is one of the most important impacts we can also make at reducing our risk of getting dementia. Also associated with a lower risk for developing heart disease and stroke. So it's a really important message to get out there at the moment.
Well, thank you for saying that, because I have to say that's something I didn't know, and I'm delighted to hear. I touch wood. I've always been lucky that I only ever remember getting the flu once, and that was about 30 years ago. But last year was the first time I decided I would start to get the flu vaccine, and I've intend to get it this year as well. And that's lets me know it's a good decision to do.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's one of those what we call off-target benefits, in that it isn't even related to the likelihood of people getting, a chest infection or flu itself. What it appears is the vaccines, they modify our immune system so that less damage is done to the brain in response to, the proteins that build up in the likes of Alzheimer's disease. So it's one of those things. As a result of COVID, we're understanding the immune system and the impact of the immune system when it's responding or fighting off these infections much better than we did beforehand. And these signals are coming through very, very clearly in research.
Well, you jumped ahead of what I was going to ask you there when you mentioned COVID. I was going to say that is it going forward, are we going to learn a lot more from COVID, with the impacts of long COVID and so forth, what the impacts of them are going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good question, Michael. I mean, I would have seen a lot of what we see with long COVID in younger people. I would have seen in older people who have had a significant infection. And, unfortunately, infections, and in particular influenza, would be a major contributor to people, dying or passing away in nursing homes every year. And what COVID did, I think, was shine a light on it for other groups that maybe, and for other clinicians who wouldn't see this as much as we would have seen it. But we've known for a long time that infections, and in particular viral infections, can have long-lasting implications for the brain and change how the brain works. In particular, conditions such as chronic fatigue, reduced concentration and attention, difficulty, recalling things. The brain is really the great, unknown and uncharted organ within the body. We still have so much to learn about it, and to understand around how subtle chemical changes within the brain impact on our ability to do our day-to-day tasks. So COVID has kind of highlighted again, the close relationship between all of these body systems. So our immune system, its impact on the heart, because remember, some people got, fast heart rhythms, the impact on the brain. So it goes beyond, just the lung infections that people were getting. And I think you're right. I think it, as a result, we will learn more. But it doesn't get, it doesn't make it any easier for the people who I would have, you know, calling me regularly, who have symptoms of long COVID and memory issues, and are having to live with very significant symptoms.
Now, I'm not going to hold you any longer because I know you've got a busy day. And but before you go, would you just let people maybe give them people where they can get more information on Dementia Trials Ireland, and if somebody wants to get involved, how they can do that?
So all the information about the sites and the trials is going to be on the website, dementiatrials.ie. So that's the resource to go to. For more information on Alzheimer's disease and other dementias, the Understand Together campaign, by, you know, which is established by the National Dementia Office. So understand, www.understandtogether.ie is a great resource for under, you know, for knowing what are your local resources. And then the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland also have, with www.alzheimer's.ie, have a great resource with regards to where memory services are. The first protocol always should be for people to link in with their GP if they're worried about their memory. I come back to what I said, we're not very good at making a judgment on our memory. By its nature, you can't remember what it is you've forgotten. Sometimes we overestimate and underestimate how our memory is. So it is important, especially as we get a little bit older, to have an objective assessment.
Thank you so much, Professor Kennelly, for chatting to us. I will put those websites onto the podcast of the interview, so people don't have to remember them. They'll be there for them on the podcast.
That's great.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much. All the best. Take care. Bye-bye. There we go. That was Professor Sean Kennelly, co-lead of Dementia Trials Ireland. And I have to say, that was probably one of the most interesting and informative interviews that I've done in quite a while. I'm going to, as I say, I'll podcast that interview, and I'll put those web addresses on the podcast.
90.3
867 1190
Near FM.